Moving on to something totally different. You know, we've all seen enough spy movies. I certainly have. To have that vision, you know, the vision of what wiretapping is all about. It's the van, right, parked down the street disguised as a delivery truck. Inside, a guy is wearing a headset, closely monitoring a tape-recorded conversation. Think Gene Hackman. Now, forget that image. That belongs to the pre-digital age. That guy in the truck may work for wiretapping just one person's voice call on an old kind of telephone. But what if you want to tap into that person's email or digital phone calls or see what web pages are being visited? Or what if you want to canvass the entire country and see who may be talking to foreigners or emailing them, like the new federal law allowing the government to do that? Now you're talking about wiretapping on a huge scale, potentially millions of people. Up next, we're going to talk about how intelligence agencies do that, and perhaps more challenging, how they can sift through the mind-numbing amounts of information they gather to find evidence of criminal or terrorist activity. And we'll talk about how allowing wider monitoring of electronic communications may actually increase national security risks. Joining me now to talk about wiretapping in a digital age is Susan Landau, co-author of Privacy on the Line, The Politics of Wiretapping and Encryption, out this year from MIT Press. She's a distinguished engineer at Sun Microsystems in Menlo Park, California, and joins us from the studios of WFCR in Amherst, Massachusetts. Welcome to the program, Dr. Landau.
Thank you very much, Ira.
I have this vision of me of a giant wiretapping operation where a giant cable goes in, a big internet cable goes into a dark room with people sitting there in total secret looking at the stuff that's going over the internet. Is that anywhere close to the truth?
It's a little bit science fiction. You want to talk about exactly what is happening now?
Yeah,
what's happening now is not actually public information, so there's a lot of suppositions.
Mm-hmm.
The age of digital wiretapping is very different than the age of the Gene Hackman wiretapping, and much of it has to do with the change in technology. So, for example, in the 1990s, we had call forwarding, and call forwarding doesn't sound very complicated. It's what you do when you're out of the house.
Right.
But it means that the little guy, you know, with the alligator clips listening to your call between the central phone switching office and your house can't listen anymore because the call doesn't go down that line if you've got call forwarding.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, it gets switched at the central office. And what you have to do is have the wiretap happen at the central office, at the phone switch.
Mm.
And so wiretapping has really changed for a number of reasons, not just the internet,
mm-hmm.
but in fact, digital switching technology.
Mm-hmm. And it's really it's an art, would you say, more than a science now?
Oh, I think it's part art, but it's a lot science because, of course, you've got to look at statistical information as you figure out your filters and how you're going to filter the information, select the information that you need.
Mm-hmm. And I imagine that is the hardest part of it, is how knowing what filter to use or how to find or filter out all that information.
That's a very hard part. Those of us on the outside think the business of getting it correct, and not just the selection process, but the security of the wiretapping, getting that correct, is in itself an extremely difficult process.
Mm-hmm.
There are all sorts of difficult pieces to this.
All right. We're going to take a short break and parse those difficult pieces. Take your calls, 1-800-989-8255. 1-800-989-TALK. We don't think we're wiretapped, but you never know. And we'll come back and talk lots more about wiretapping with Susan Landau, co-author of Privacy on the Line, The Politics of Wiretapping and Encryption, that's out this year from MIT Press. And your calls about wiretapping. Do you wonder how it's done? Do you have any suggestions of what kinds of things you'd like to see happening? We'll talk about the security, as Dr. Landau said, the important security issues that are raised by wiretapping. So don't go away. We'll be right back after this short break. This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow, talking with Susan Landau, distinguished engineer at Sun Microsystems in Menlo Park, California, co-author of Privacy on the Line, The Politics of Wiretapping and Encryption, a new book out this year. Our number 1-800-989-8255. Dr. Landau, let's get into a couple of the issues that you mentioned before the break. And one was the technology. Legally, it can be done, but the problem with the actual technology of doing it, is it possible to do what they say they want to do?
Well, it depends on what you mean by is it possible. So technically what you do, so we have to backtrack a bit. It's the case that communications don't come in very much by wire and by radio anymore. They come in by optical fiber when you're coming from outside the United States. And so what you need to do if you want to wiretap is first you have to split the fiber. And this is a funny thing to non-physicists, but you can take an optical fiber and you can split it. It's sort of like a T-junction, and you get two copies of it. Of course, they're not quite at the same strength, but they're still good enough. One copy goes right to the phone company, which is the one that received it in the first place, and they do whatever they do, switching the calls. The other copy, if you're going to wiretap, and right now we're talking hypothetically, if you're going to wiretap, you then run it through filters. And the filters are going to select data based on pre-decided terms that you want to look at.
Does that mean you have to get cooperation from all the phone companies to do this, to let you tap into their fiber?
Well, if you're going to put your facilities on their facilities, if you're going to do your wiretapping on their facilities, and there really is no other way to do it now, once we've moved to optical fiber, yes, you do. You do need to get cooperation.
Mm-hmm. So,
and that's been actually a very contentious issue.
Tell us about that.
Well, there is a case happening right now in San Francisco. The Electronic Frontier Foundation is litigating in San Francisco that AT&T has set aside a secure room for the NSA to wiretap. Now, all of this is alleged, and the government is trying to get the case dismissed under state secrets. But the alleged activity is that there is a secure room where the signal is split in the way that I said, and then run through filters, and then the communications of interest shipped back to the National Security Agency, the NSA. And it's also alleged that, of course, it's not just happening in AT&T in San Francisco, but a number of other sites as well. But all of this is alleged, and as I said, the government is trying to get the case dismissed.
And what are the plaintiffs saying? What is their problem with that?
The plaintiff saying is that AT&T has not protected the privacy of communications, which it is bound to do to its customers. So AT&T finds itself, you know, again, we're talking about an alleged situation, but AT&T finds itself in the middle with the government allegedly requesting certain things, and if AT&T is indeed supplying it, then it is not honoring its commitments. That was one of the issues in the law that was passed two weeks ago. Mm-hmm. The government did not indemnify the carriers in the law that was passed.
Oh, so they could be sued.
That's right. And President Bush said that was inappropriate, but that's the law that Congress passed. Of course, on the other side, the civil liberties groups say that this is inappropriate reading of American communications. The law broadened wiretapping enormously, and the civil libertarian groups, as I said, say that this type of wiretapping is completely inappropriate, and the telephone companies should be protecting communications. They always have, and for them not to is a real breach of contract.
Now, when we talked about that Gene Hackman scenario, with, you know, sitting in the truck, the wiretapper owned all the equipment, right?
That's right.
You didn't have to depend on getting the fiber cable to come to you. You just tapped in yourself.
Well, you know, it was a lot easier for intelligence agencies when what was going on is that the communications traveled by radio, because then you just put down a receiver and you get it. You put down an antenna and you get it, and you own the antenna. You control it. But fiber optic cable is much the better way to go. It's much more efficient. Communications travel much faster. The result is that now the intelligence agencies have to put their equipment on other people's facilities, and that makes it very complicated. It makes it complicated, especially in terms of security.
Mm-hmm. We're talking about a huge volume of calls here or emails, and we touched on it briefly. Do you create a computer algorithm to sift through it, or do you just hire millions of people to listen? How do you know what to sift through?
Well, you know, it would be billions of people to listen because there are huge numbers of communications. I seem to recall that East Germany, 1 in 6 worked for the Stasi. I don't know what the number would be if you had people working. No, you have to have computer programs. And what you do is you look both at externals. If it's an internet-based communication, you're going to look at the IP address. You're going to look at the routing. If it's an internal, if it's a telephone communication, you're going to look at the telephone number, if it's a PBX exchange, and so on. But you also look at the internals of the communication. Does the voice print match a person of interest? Are there words being said that are of interest? And you do both of those types of matches. And, of course, what you want to do, the original filters will be set by people, but then you want the selection process to change as things become interesting. You don't want a person to have to intervene to say, ah, person X talked to person Y is now a person of interest, let's follow person Y's activities as well. You want the computer system, the filter, to automatically select person mm-hmm. Y and add that to the list of interest.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to the phones, 1-800-989-8255. Steve in St. Louis.
Hi, my concern is actually, certainly, I guess, the privacy concern, but as somebody interested in computer security, I'm quite aware that, you know, it's been very common in the past for people to break into phone switches or routers and hijack these types of wiretapping connections. So I'm concerned about the possibility with a government agency going in and creating undocumented connections or fiber breakoffs. You know, what is the possibility that a third party who is unknown to the government or the customers hijacking this type of wiretapping connection and using it without any type of oversight?
That's a great question. So if we think about it being done now, we have to back up a little. Of course, until the new law, it wasn't permitted to be done. Now, of course, the EFF case says that, in fact, it's been being done for the last few years in San Francisco and other places. But, of course, the National Security Agency has had the legal ability to do that type of wiretapping in other parts of the world. In other parts of the world, they're not listening, presumably, to Americans, or Americans are very rare when they're listening internationally. And so they don't have to worry about the constitutional protections that are required when they're listening to Americans. So if they develop a good scheme, a good method of building into the switch, then if somebody else is listening in over their shoulder, there's a problem because their security is breached, but there isn't the problem of Americans being listened to. Now transport that technology here, and that's what we may well be looking at because, of course, there hasn't been time to build those right toys for usage in the United States. Transport that technology here, and you have a real risk. Now, I'm not so worried about the hackers because at least in the major installations, and we're talking about this type of wiretapping happening at major switches, at the major installations, you've got high security. But So I'm not worried about a hacker. I'm not worried even about a terrorist organization. But I am worried about another government being able to take control. And we have had instances of governments being able to wiretap in a major way, to use another country's system. And that's of great concern.
And this method, the wiretapping we're doing now, makes that more likely or more possible?
Well, the problem is, as I said, that the systems that the National Security Agency has used up till now have mm-hmm. been deployed abroad.
Right.
And the question has been, has it ever been the case that such a system, that they've lost the control of that system to somebody else? Not have there been problems, because problems is a judgmental issue. But Congress hasn't asked the National Security Agency, have you ever had lost control of your system to somebody else? And that's the type of question that Congress should have been asking before they passed the law 2 weeks ago. We have an example a couple of years ago. The Greeks had a terrible wiretapping case. About 100 cell phones belonging to members of the Greek government, including the Greek prime minister, the members of his cabinet, members of the opposition party, were wiretapped for up to 10 months by parties unknown. The wiretappers broke into or used or accessed broke into is probably a misnomer because it may well have been an inside job. The system run by Vodafone, developed by Ericsson. We know how long the wiretapping was gone on for. We know who was wiretapped, but we still don't know a year and a half later, 2 years after it was discovered, who did the wiretapping. That was a wiretapping system that was built to be used under law enforcement purposes. That was a wiretap system that was built for criminal investigations, but then was misused. And as I said, we don't know who did the tapping.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. And there's the possibility that could happen in this country, you're saying.
Absolutely. So we had a case last August, and this is about break into a computer system, where a group systematically broke into Army installations, four defense installations over a period of about 8 hours in August, one evening in August, and wrapped up and stole plans, flight plans for helicopters from the Army and the Air Force. The break-ins, each of them occurred in a space of 10 to 30 minutes, highly professional. The data was then shipped first to Taiwan and the Koreas and then to China. It has all the hallmark of being a military operation, but we, of course, haven't figured out who exactly it is who's done it. Now, if the U.S. military is vulnerable in that way, I really also worry about our telecommunication systems.
Is there any lid you can put on this or any firewall, so to speak?
Well, you're building in a wiretapping scheme. And now the question is, who's looking over your shoulder? If you have somebody, if you haven't built it perfectly securely, and we know from both the two examples that I've just mentioned, where those are systems that should have been very highly protected, and of course the break-ins that we hear about all the time, we know that building software is hard. I mean, that's really what the problem is. You're building a wiretapping scheme that has to be controlled remotely. You're not going to have NSA agents at each of the switches monitoring. It's controlled remotely, and it's software. And this is prone to problems. So do we know that it has been built robustly enough so that it cannot be controlled, that control cannot be taken over by somebody else, looking over the shoulder of NSA? I'm not talking about somebody else actually then changing the filters, but somebody else changing their content so as to mess up the NSA filters, reading what the NSA is interested in and so on, reading our traffic. And that's very dangerous.
So while you think you may be creating a more secure system looking to find threats from the outside, you may be allowing more threats to come in the other direction from the outside to us.
That's certainly the worry. That's certainly the worry from the computer security end of things.
Mm-hmm. Is it because this has been rushed so quickly, or is it has not time to be tested?
Well, the bill was a very strange exercise. So essentially what happened is that FISA, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, you don't need a warrant if you're wiretapping what's called a non-U.S. person, that is somebody who is not in the United States physically, person or corporation, and who is not a U.S. citizen. So a U.S. citizen abroad is also a U.S. person. You don't need a warrant for that. But therefore, FISA had an exemption that said, essentially, it was an exemption by not actually being in the law. It said you don't need a warrant if you're going to do a radio intercept of a non-U.S. person on U.S. soil. Now, what does that mean? That means you can build an antenna on U.S. soil, and as long as the communications you're capturing are non-U.S. persons, for example, from satellites, of somebody from South America talking to somebody from Asia, that's fine. Well, what happened over the last decade is we had the build-out of fiber optic, and fiber optic cable is much more efficient for communication than satellite. You get a 100-millisecond delay instead of a half-second delay, and people much prefer that. But fiber optic cable is a cable. It comes into the United States as a cable, and all of a sudden those antennas aren't any good. So the National Security Agency went to Congress and said, we have a problem. We can't wiretap, but it's just a technical reason. It's not a philosophical reason that you didn't allow us to do that. It was just a technical oversight. Congress has in the past changed such things easily. And that was the issue. But all of a sudden, that was the discussion 2 weeks ago. And then around Thursday of the week in which this law passed, the law broadened tremendously. And it went from we're going to allow the wiretapping within a fiber optic cable to we're going to allow warrantless wiretapping of a U.S. person as long as they're communicating with someone believed to be a non-U.S. person. And that's a tremendous broadening.
Mm-hmm. We're talking about wiretapping with Susan Landau this hour on Talk of the Nation's Science Friday from NPR News. So go ahead. I'm sorry.
The reason that the NSA wanted this ability, felt that it was just a mere technical change, is that the U.S. is what's called a communications hub. It's a real transit point. A lot of communications from South America to Asia, from Asia to Asia to Europe, from Europe to Europe, will often travel through the United States. For example, AT&T built the optical fiber from Taiwan to the U.S. and back to the People's Republic at a time when you couldn't communicate directly between Taiwan and the PRC. And then, of course, for reasons of contract, for reasons of cost, often those communications still transit the U.S., even though there's a much shorter geographical distance directly. Mm-hmm. And the NSA wanted to be able to tap into those communications.
Mm-hmm. So are you saying, in effect, that this is, as they say in software, this is like a beta testing of the whole system because it's not been tried before?
Sure feels like that to us in the security community. We want to know from the NSA. We want to hear that their systems are robust enough that they've never lost control of the system so that you don't end up with a Greek wiretapping case in the United States. There's a lot of not only governmental information that needs to be secure, but a lot of non-governmental information. Back in the 70s, we had a wheat shortage at a time when we sold wheat very cheaply to the Soviet Union. And what happened was the USSR was listening into our communications, discovered that we were about to have a bit of a shortage, bought wheat before we figured out the shortage was happening. They were tapping in from Glen Cove at the time. And that was when we were doing transmittals via microwave. We need to have our communications secure, too, our business communications, our personal communications. And that's reasons of security, not just privacy.
Mm-hmm. And you can't get that definite assurance from anybody. No one will talk about anything, will they?
Well, certainly Congress hasn't asked those hard questions yet, mm-hmm. And that's been really problematic.
Mm-hmm. And you're hoping that they do.
Well, the law is due to be renewed in 6 months. It expires mm-hmm. in 6 months. And certainly in addition to the questions about civil liberties, unlike the previous instantiation of FISA, this one doesn't have judicial oversight as long as one party is believed to be outside the United States, and believed is a funny word, too. But there isn't judicial oversight, but there hasn't also been any technology discussion. There haven't been technologists in to raise the issues of what are the security problems. And Congress really needs to ask those questions.
All right. We've run out of time, Dr. Landau, but you have certainly raised these issues that I don't think a lot of us have thought about before. I want to thank you for taking time to be with us.
Thanks very much, Ira.
Susan Landau, distinguished engineer at Sun Microsystems in Menlo Park, California, and co-author of Privacy on the Line, The Politics of Wiretapping and Encryption. Very interesting book out this year from MIT Press. We're going to take a short break and be right back. Stay with us. I'm Ira Flatow. This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News.